uncensored, no holds barred talk. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This is the Global Reality Radio Network.
Of the Global Reality right here on the Global Reality Radio Network with me, your host, Josh Reeves. Thanks for being here with us tonight, and I'm back in the saddle with you yet again. It's been a little bit, I know, since we've had a live show, but thanks so much for being with us here tonight for another late-night Moonbat edition of the broadcast. It is the 10th of April into the 11th, 2012, and I am back from a successful road trip and filming for the new Ancient Society's Rock Wall documentary, and boy, oh boy, oh boy, what a trip it was. And I'm still kind of recovering from it, to be honest with you. It was a lot of miles and a lot of work in a short amount of time, and it was as epic as it could be. But I just want to thank every single person out there who helped make this possible, and everybody who donated and showed their support and help me to be able to do this. I appreciate you guys so much for the help, and I could have done it without you, and we definitely got it achieved. Here's how it broke down. Over 1,500 miles in 3 days, over four states, to four ancient mound sites and two concerts. That's how I rolled on this one, man. Oh, my goodness. I got in real late Sunday night, so I was still exhausted last night. That's why I didn't do a show. But here with you tonight, and we're going to get into some news and information, see if we have any emails as well. If you want to send emails in, questions, comments, the usual type of stuff, globalrealityshow@gmail.com is my email address. That's globalrealityshow@gmail.com. My website where this broadcast originates from is, of course, theglobalreality.com. That's theglobalreality.com. And up there you'll find all things pertaining to my work, including the stream to listen to the stream 24/7. We play, repeat the show after it ends live. We play archives the rest of the time. We also have all my documentaries up there, including my newest one, The Secret Rite Volume 2. It's on Blu-ray and DVD up there. You can get all kinds of packages up there as well. Video clips, audiobooks taken from books we've read here on the show. Of course, the chat room, got everybody hanging out in there tonight. You'll also notice a new tab up there. We have a sponsor now for the broadcast, if you believe that. That's pretty awesome. It's something we haven't ever really had, and not something I've ever really been opposed to, but not something I've actively sought out. But we had, I described this, you know, situation several times where I said if we could find somebody that was, you know, basically, you know, one of our listeners or something that had something that they wanted to help us out with, I would go with that. But one of our listeners happened to, his aunt happened to have this product that she's selling, and the deal basically was like, you know, you don't have to play any commercials. You don't even have to have a banner up there. I don't even care if you do any live reads. This is exactly what he said to me. That's pretty unbelievable for somebody who wants to sponsor your broadcast in exchange for a link. That's pretty awesome. So I will definitely direct you to that sponsor tab and go and check out what they've got there. It seems to be a pretty It's not a, you know, it's not snake oil or anything else. I mean, it just seems to be one of those, you know, type of things where our diets are so jacked up because the food that, even the food that we, even if you want to seek out health food and seek out, you know, organic vegetables and stuff, most of us, maybe not all of us, the people who go out of their way to eat well, but most of us are not getting what we need in our diets. That's just a fact. So this kind of seems to be one of those things where, you know, for a lot of us that live in the city or on the go all the time, we can't get our usual stuff in our diet. Seems like it might be that kind of good thing. But anyway, that's up there, and I'm really excited about having that. And maybe we'll have some other people want to come forward in a similar fashion to support what we're doing here and have a sponsor up there. But I like that. I mean, the fact, you know, we don't have to even have, because that's my thing. I still refuse to have commercials. I still refuse to have banner ads on the front page or anything. But I said, you know, my idea was, well, why don't we have just to have a tab, you know, and people, we can have links up there for sponsors under that. And that way, I don't understand why other websites don't do that. You know, just have, instead of having fucking banners flashing at the front of the, you know, the fucking page when you come there. I mean, you're coming to find information. You're not coming to be sold products to. I don't know why other entities out there still can't wrap their minds around that, but that tells you right there why they're in this. They're in it to use fear to sell products. I mean, period, in a store. And most of the people and the most of the radio shows out there, that's exactly what they're doing. They're using this information to elicit a response out of people that will then elicit them to open up their wallets to buy all these products to supposedly, you know, save them from whatever catastrophes coming this week. You know, aliens, asteroids, earthquakes, New World Order, Illuminati, whatever it may be. You know, whoever's creeping under the bed this week, we got a cream and a pill and a water filter for that. Oh, aliens are going to invade. There's going to be an asteroid attack. Oh, well, shit. let's get Bob on the phone over here. He's got some cream that you're going to be able to put on that. It's some anti-asteroid cream. I'm not going to promise you it'll get rid of your goddamn hemorrhoids, but by God, it'll sure as fuck get rid of your asteroids. So anyway, there's that. But thanks for being with us tonight. We're definitely going to get into some different news and information tonight. But yeah, everybody's wanting to know about the trip, and so it was fantastic. What I was doing essentially on this trip was going to shoot mound sites that, because what my thesis here is based on the information that I've looked at from the rock wall. I mean, I didn't even really ever look into any of these other sites around the United States until after I was, you know, started working on this rock wall film. And you know, the evidence pointing in the direction of, you know, the feathered serpent Quetzalcoatl, with artifacts being found near the wall, the representations of that. And of course, the Quetzalcoatl being a master in metallurgy and crystal working, two things that we see are really keynote items about the rock wall from the little research that's been done so far. And so I started researching and finding out that there were these other sites around the American South that seemed to be very similar to one another in the things that they were into as far as building mound structures that were aligned to certain celestial events like the solstice and the equinox, or whether they'll be aligned to planetary systems, and many of them are. And as I've talked about before, a lot of these things are all aligned. Everybody gets hung up about things being aligned to Sirius and stuff like that, but if you really study it, we've got things that are aligned to all sorts of different planetary systems. There's not just one, and as the Sumerian texts talk about, allegedly this is because they aligned these with every, you know, civilization or culture, whatever, having different quote-unquote gods, you know, because it appears that we had, you know, these extraterrestrials, whatever they may be, Anunnaki, whatever it may be, I don't know, going around, just going by what the texts are saying, going around setting themselves up as gods. And we do, you know, you can see that in the historical thing. There does appear that there are these very similar gods all over the place, all over the world, in times in which there was no way they could have been cross-pollinating the cultures. You know, from, again, Quetzalcoatl, Onash, Viracocha, Jesus, Buddha, I mean, on and on and on. And all these things seem to have similar stories. And I was planning on going to the Georgia Guidestones on this trip, but it turned out to be way, way, way out of our way. It was going to be an 8-hour round trip one day when we had to get back to some other sites to shoot in Alabama. And it really, the guys don't think it was really not that important of a thing for this film. It was kind of one of those, I just want, you know, I've never been there. I want to go and check it out. I thought it would be a cool thing. But, I mean, there's so much footage and so many pictures and stuff online. It really didn't need more for me. So my time was really more well spent going to some of these other sites. We went to a massive site in Arkansas, though I'm going to have to go back because I want to actually go inside this place. I got the footage I needed, but I had to get it from the road. But it was still, I mean, with the zoom on my camera, it turned out great. But the most interesting place we went to was this place in Alabama called Moundville. Near Tuscaloosa, Alabama. And it's a very interesting thing, and I had no idea about any of this stuff until I got there. As soon as I got there, I see this water tower. It says, "Welcome to Moundville." It's got a big hand on it with two serpents intertwining it with an eye in the middle of the hand. And I went, oh, yeah, we're in the right place here. Oh, yeah. Most definitely we're in the right place here. I went into this place and I started reading. I've got footage of me reading this plaque from this site, and it was just amazing how it was talking about how they don't know who the people were. They don't know their names. They don't know the name of the city. They don't know what happened to them. Anything. The people who built this, you know, the town that they call Moundville, these giant mounds. But what they did know was that. You know, that symbol was their main symbol, and they believed that a serpent god, Quetzalcoatl, the feathered serpent, they believed that the feathered serpent was their almighty god, so they aligned these mounds to Orion and other locations and basically told the people that, you know, this was all so they could enter, basically, in so many words, enter through the Stargate and go into this other realm. And, it, you know, one thing that struck me when I was there and I was reading this stuff, I was like, God damn, maybe they fucking did, you know? Because, I mean, where it's kind of like, where did they go? So it was kind of one of those things when you're there looking at it. And, of course, they had this swamp around these mounds. And me and my buddy were like, I was like, let's go over here, you know, and see if this has been here. And, of course, the when we walked over to this swamp, there's fucking snakes in there. It's big, you know, all in it. And I actually got this little the Native Americans built, or the natives used to make these little dolls called Cochina dolls. And I got a little small one there. It was like $8, and on the bottom of it, it's totally handmade. I mean, this is there's nothing. It's all leather and wood, but it's a little feathered serpent god, and he's got a little feather on top of his head, and he's got two little straps of leather that are his serpents and his snakes. And we went inside of the gift shop. As soon as we went inside of the gift shop, all the pillars, and I've got video of all this, were intertwined with serpents. Up on the wall, they had an effigy of this. It was a bird. You know, the feathered serpent, birds, avian reptiles. You had this, and it was in the clouds, and then they had these mannequins underneath it of these rituals they were doing, carrying the priestess up on this thing. It was totally fascinating. And when I told the lady in the gift shop what I was there doing, she gave me her card. She was really excited about it, gave me her card, and said to let them know when the documentary's done because they want to sell it there. They actually want to sell it in the gift shop in Moundville. That's, you know, it's fantastic. But I want to give a big shout-out to all the people of Alabama. I got to tell you what, Alabama, of all the states I've been to in my life, Alabama was the fucking raddest state I've ever been to. The people in Alabama, I don't know if we have any listeners in Alabama out there. If you do, please contact me. Let me know. Send me an email or something. Say, hey, I'm from Alabama. GlobalRealityShow@gmail.com. Alabama people, Alabama women too. Oh, man. I got hit on more times. I've been hit on in 5 years in my own hometown. Talked to more people than I've talked to in 5 years. Everybody was friendly. Everybody was super nice. Everybody was super receptive to what I was doing. In fact, one guy I talked to, was totally geeking out when I told him what I was doing, and he told me about this place. I didn't have time to go, but we're going to try to plan another trip sometime to go and cover this. But I think National Geographic's probably covered it enough anyway, but I'd like to go there myself. But it was only like an hour out of our way. My buddy had to get back. He was having personal issues, and he had to get back to his kids. If I'd had one, and we were kind of, I mean, even though we did get some help financially, you know, it just, when you're out there on the road and the way these gas prices are, man, you just burn through your money, you know, really quick. But this place called Russell Cave in Alabama, where they found artifacts from 12,000 BC that have like Christ depictions on them, like 12,000 years before Christ and stuff. And I'm definitely going to try to go there at some point. We went to Florence, Alabama, which is in Muscle Shoals. I've never been to Muscle Shoals before. Always wanted to go there. It's beautiful, big mounds there. Got some photos I put in the chat room the other night for some folks. I think I've got one here I can pull up for you guys right now and put in there. It was very interesting to me to see and go up on these mounds, and, you know, being that it was Ostara, you know, Easter, Ostara weekend, equinox type thing. You know, being at these sites, I got to tell you, man, being at these sites around, you know, because they're all aligned to these, you know, the solstice and the equinox and all this. Being that it didn't dawn on me planning this trip this weekend. It just, that was the weekend my buddy could do it. One of our favorite bands happened to be playing in their hometown that weekend too, and this was just the time in which we could do it. It was weird because most of the time nobody would plan a trip like this on Easter weekend, especially not somebody that has kids like my buddy does. But I didn't even think about it until we got on the road that, you know, here we were going to these ancient sites that are aligned to these different events, and we're here during one of them. And so, yeah, I mean, they're definitely was some amazing energy at these sites during that time. But I went to four different sites. The one in Arkansas was huge, the Toltec Mounds in Arkansas. Went there, and that was an amazing sight. We went to the ones in Florence, Alabama, which I'm putting a picture of in the chat room right now. I mean, look at that. Look how green it is. I went up to the top of that thing, sat up there for a while. And then we went to another one in Alabama. I forget the name of it, but it's like the largest still standing mount. There was another one that was even bigger, and I had heard about it. And I tried to find it, and I kept not being able to find where it was at. And then, lo and behold, after I couldn't find out where it was at, I found this article talking about how a couple of years ago, they bulldozed the biggest mound in Alabama and built a Sam's Club on top of it. Now, Sam's Club, if you don't know, is a store of, you know, Walmart, Sam Walton. And I just was immediately, as soon as I heard that, taken aback because, of course, as you know, I've talked about, they built the Walmart in Rockwall smack dab on top of part of the ancient rock wall there. You know, one, okay, maybe that's a coincidence. Two, it makes me wonder how many more there are. I mean, is this like a precedent that Walmart has set of building stores on top of, you know, ancient sites like this? It's unbelievable. For there to be two, I'm just blown away by that. Yes, Tesla in the chat room. Could I feel the interchange of the energy field when I got to the sites? Yeah, absolutely. I'll tell you this. I got different feelings from the different sites, like meaning that I didn't get the same feeling at each site. Moundville felt more like, well, it felt more like exactly what the story said. You know, that at one time there was something, because, you know, I mean, the way they do these rituals and stuff like this, especially when it involves the earth and earth energies or if they put these temples on certain energy grid lines, ley lines, stuff like that, they embed their energy into those sites and those places so that it sticks around for, you know, eons and eons to come. But at Moundville, I felt sort of like that whatever was there, whatever the energy was, it was there. There was something there, but it was, you know, was long gone by that point. At some of the other sites, in Florence, Alabama, and Muscle Shoals, right on the Tennessee River. God, it was beautiful in there. I definitely felt there was something there. And on the sign, it said that, you know, it was pretty forthcoming about there not being anything buried in that mound. So, and that's where I got, you know, a pretty big feeling at was there. But I've talked about many times that at some point, research has to go beyond, you know, reading and reading books and reading articles or, you know, doing research on the internet or whatever it may be. At some point, it has to go to the field. And for me, I think that that was the biggest thing for me for this trip, that because I really was able to take all the stuff that I've researched and read and stuff for years and apply that while I was in the field to gain a greater perspective and to have this opportunity to be able to go and do this for this film and get the footage that I did. I mean, mission accomplished, man. I got all the footage. Like I said, there's a couple of other sites I may want to go back and visit at some point, but not anything I have to get, you know, absolutely done for this film. But it was really amazing to be able to take that knowledge out into the field and look at these things. And what really struck me as being very apparent was this overarching sense, no matter what site you go to, there's always this thing about, they reinforce very strongly that it's a mystery. Oh, it's a mystery. We'll never know. We'll never know about this. We'll never know about that. And I noticed that's very common. It's common at every one of these sites. They all say that. We'll never, it's a mystery, blah, blah, blah. And I wonder, you know, when I look at the fact that at all these sites, well, like the Smithsonian, at a couple of these sites I went to, the Smithsonian back in the 30s and 40s came out there and did digs and found thousands of artifacts. Now, those thousands of artifacts are not found in any of the museums at any of these sites that you go to. They have a few scant artifacts. And so that's when I really, you know, before, I guess, you know, just like anybody else, I probably would have went to, without doing my own research, I probably would have went to some of these sites and just said, oh, yeah, it's a mystery. We'll never know, blah, 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 and taking that as face value. But knowing what I know about how archaeology has been covered up all over the world for eons, and it continues to be, when I started to see, you know, these Smithsonian digs and finding out that, you know, they found artifacts and things that they don't even have pictures of, that nobody knows where they went. They're in some Smithsonian vault somewhere. You know, and then they're reinforcing that, oh, it's just a mystery. It's a mystery. That's when I started realizing, you know, it's not a mystery. These people know full well what these sites were used for and who was here and everything else. But the context and the information of that, for some reason, would be a threat to, of course, their power structure and their supremacy with world religion and science and the whole amalgamation of keeping people right where they want them at and keeping them controllable, their minds controllable, and keeping them in a state of arrested development by the holding back and withholding of this information. So it was really, that for me was a fascinating thing to be out there and go into these sites and to see this stuff and to really actively see with a new set of eyes more of, you know, the details of a cover-up and how they've covered up a lot of this stuff more than you really see by just, you know, looking at something online. So I'm really grateful for the opportunity to be able to go out into the field on this trip. It was a totally different thing for me as far as, you know, I've never gotten to make a film where, you know, I'm going out into the field and stuff, and it's enjoyable. It's a lot of work for not a lot of result. You know, you're talking about, you know, really showtime, film time, you're talking about a minute or 2 minutes of footage, you know, per site, really. But that was all, you know, that's all I really need because the information ties in and I've got the research and everything. But I absolutely loved Alabama. Muscle Shoals is just an absolutely beautiful place. You know, all the music history there with the recording studios, Fame Recording Studios, 2614 Jackson Highway, Muscle Shoals Sound, where, you know, all the greats recorded. I mean, you know, everybody. You can go look it up and see the history there. But we drove by, after we went to the mounds, it was like right down the street. We rolled over to Muscle Shoals Sound Studio, and I hopped out to get some pictures in front of it. And as I was getting some pictures, this guy comes out, and he says, hey, I can't let you bring a camera inside, but if you go put your camera up, you guys can come inside and check out the studio. And they don't do any kind of tours or anything normally because it's still, you know, a functioning, working studio. And synchronistically enough, just a couple of days before we were there, they had taken out a lot of the new recording gear or newer stuff that they had in there in the studio and taken it back to storage and brought out of storage all the old stuff that they used on, you know, I mean, my God, Paul Simon, you know, Kodachrome, still crazy after all these years, Willie Nelson, Phases and Stages, Bob Seger, Night Moves, you know, Rolling Stones, Sticky Fingers, on and on and on and on and on. And I think this is partly responsible. I think because the Black Keys had this album called Brothers they put out, I guess, last year, year before or something. And they had recorded it there. And so I guess there's been a resurgence in popularity in this. But I was just geeking out, dude. I mean, I got to touch the board that Glenn Johns recorded Led Zeppelin 3 on. Oh, geez. I mean, all of it. I got to sing and clap my hands in the room where the Rolling Stones recorded the vocals for Wild Horses. I mean, it was just absolutely ridiculous. I got to see the piano that Bob Seger played on Night Moves. It was just one of those, when you're on the road, man, these crazy synchronicities happen. Things happen that you're not expecting. It's like part of the magic of the road, you know. For instance, the first night we were driving to Alabama, we drove to Memphis like 7 hours and drove there and stayed the night and got up the next day and drove to Alabama. Well, when we got into Little Rock, which is like 5 hours from Dallas, that's where the Toltec Mounds were. Well, we weren't going to go to the Toltec Mounds that day. We're going to wait and come back as we did on Sunday and go there. But we had GPS going, and for some reason the little button on the options for avoid highways was ticked, and I didn't go in and tick it. So when we got into Little Rock, going to Memphis, it set itself to avoid highways. And so we wound up out in the boonies, and the next thing I know, I look over, and I see this is the street. It says Toltec Mounds Road, and the sun's going down. And I look over, and we're at the fucking mounds. And I was like, you know, that's just a crazy, wild synchronicity that, you know, we would wind up. I was like, well, we know where they're at. Well, we come back through here Sunday, don't we? It was just a wild synchronicity that we would wind, of all places, when we got lost, we'd wind up right where we were going to be, look what we were going to be looking for, you know, coming back through there. But, yeah, man, I mean, we drove Sunday all the way back, like 13 or 14 hours. All the way through, but it was totally worth it. Alabama is just a beautiful state. The people there know how to fucking drive. I got to say this. This is the appeal of Alabama to me. It is the most non-police state I have been to in the union yet. Now there's going to be mass droves of people immigrating to Alabama, and my nice little hideaway is going to be taken away forever. Great. No, just kidding. But no, I would move there in a heartbeat. If I had a chance to move to Birmingham or something like that, Muscle Shoals, I'd move there in a heartbeat. Oh, yeah. Very awesome place. Beautiful. People are just super nice. And like I said, everybody that I told about what I was doing, nobody, usually when I tell people what I'm doing, when I'm working on a film, they give me that, that look like I just pinched them on the ass, or I just, you know, gave them some sour milk, you know? They kind of squint their eyes, turn their head sideways. You know, huh? What you talking about? Nobody did that. I saw a lot of people. So I got this press pass now. I actually finally got a legit press pass about a month or so ago. And, boy, that motherfucker is worth its weight in gold. I'll tell you what. It really was. Because it's weird. As soon as people saw that, it just doors would open. I mean, really. And then also, as soon as people saw it, they would immediately, you know, strike up a conversation and ask me questions. But I was just blown away at how receptive people were to the idea of trying to find out the real story behind these things. And I thought about, you know, here in Texas, where I know there, we know for a fact that there were thousands and thousands of ancient cities and sites here. And there in Alabama, there's just, you know, there's tons of places you can visit. There are no archaeological sites anywhere around where I live in Texas. But it's not like there weren't people here. It's that everything's been covered up. So my premise for this film was to show how how the rock wall itself ties into these different societies. It seemed to be one massive sprawling civilization that all worship the feathered serpent. And again, you know, America, Amaraka, our country itself, America, Amaraka, the land of the snake, the land of the serpent. You know, what serpent are we talking about here? the serpent god, Quetzalcoatl, that could walk on water and was crucified and had all the same things as Jesus. You know, some reptilian star god or something. I mean, who is it? I mean, just like in the Bible, be ye as wise as the serpent. Well, okay, what fucking serpents are you talking about? I'd like to know. But again, I just want to thank everybody out there. We had a couple of people that helped out while I was on the trip and got us some funds that we needed to keep going the extra mile. And I just want to thank everybody out there for giving me the opportunity to go out into the field and get this footage for this film and to get this done. It was crazy. It was like as soon as I was done and I got everything I needed, like the film really felt like a reality. You know what I mean? It really felt like it wasn't one of those things like something I want to do anymore. Or something I hope I'll be able to do. As soon as I got all the footage I needed, it was like, wow, this is really happening now. This film's actually, it's actually going to happen now. And that, it was just kind of a big, you know, moment for me, you know, because every time you go to make a film, it's a struggle because, you don't know if you're going to be able to do it. You don't know if you're going to have the funds to do it, you know. And, you know, that satisfaction, that feeling of knowing, wow, it's a reality now. It really is going to happen. It was just unbelievable. And another thing weird that was happening is my main camera, one I haven't had very long, started crapping out of me while we were there and doing weird things. And then once I got back into town, it was working fine. Strange thing, but I had a backup. Anyway, I had my old one, had a backup, and it's high def too. So that worked out quite well, and I got all the footage that I needed. And excited about putting this together. The first initial film for this The dig is not going to entail the first part of this film. It's going to be basically a two-part film. And the first part of the film, which I hope to have done, I guess I was shooting for like July, something like that. So I think we'll definitely have it done by then. And then what I want to use this film for is sort of the, you know, like a promotional tool to try and get some interest up for some funding on doing an actual dig on the rock wall, and supposedly have a possible site lined up where we're going to be able to do that at. So that's the biggest thing, is that we had to this trip had to happen, and this film had to get made to ensure that we're going to be able to actually get the work done on the rock wall itself that we need to do. And personally, folks, I think it is. I think this is going to do it. And so again, I want to thank everybody out there, for giving me the opportunity to be able to get this done. Give me the opportunity to be able to get out there into the field and, you know, it just see some things I haven't seen before and go some places I haven't been before and experience things I haven't experienced before and getting, you know, some new context and then also talking to, you know, gave me a lot of confidence talking to people and seeing how interested people are. And then the lady at Moundsville wants to sell the film there in their gift shop. That sort of receptiveness, you know, and how receptive you all have been to the idea of this film, and how, I mean, I've got so many people that want to help on this dig. It's unbelievable. I mean, I'm so grateful. We get the funding that we need for it, and we're going to be all good. I think we will eventually. Everybody's wanted to lend a hand on this. You know, people want to come and dig. I've got, you know, some listeners that want to come and dig, and We're gonna see what we can do about doing that and working that out. And we've just got all kinds of volunteers, people that want to help out with this. And I got to tell you, in 5 years I've been doing radio, and I've been doing this stuff for about 15. But receptiveness is just not something that I'm used to. You know, it's not something that when you do this you usually get. You know, excitedness about this stuff, but it's a fact. There is evidence here that, you know, indeed of Atlantis, or indeed of, you know, these ancient civilizations. But there, the thing that we find is that the questions that we have that we can unravel here apply to the questions that we have to the larger grand scope picture of the world system, the tyrannical system, the religious power system, the whole thing. And peeling back the onion layers of this and getting into this realm of showing that these ancient people who weren't supposed to, you know, supposedly supposed to have a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of, had sophisticated knowledge of planetary systems, star systems, and of these ancient gods that had, you know, high technology and power. And that, for some reason, the knowledge of their very existence threatens the power structure in such a way that they, well, they build Walmarts on top of these sites. They bulldoze them over. They excavate them, and they take the artifacts, never to be found again. I mean, my God, in Ohio, they found, on almost every mound in Ohio, they found giant skeletons. In fact, at one, they found like 18 giant skeletons. Where did they go? They disappear every time. And after going to these sites and seeing these mounds, I'm 100% convinced that the downtown area of Rockwall is actually built on an ancient mound, because it, the elevation drop and shift is so huge, and there's so many giant mound areas there that they're totally artificial, because this is the black land, flat land prairie out here. There are no hills and things like that in this area of North Texas, not at all. So, yeah, exciting stuff. Let's see what else we have to get in here tonight. How's it going tonight, chat room? How you guys going to go say hi to the chat room? How you guys doing there? If you do this dig, I'd love to help. Yeah, well, it's not if. It's just a win at this point. I've actually got somebody that has some of the actual wall on their property, and they said we could do a dig there, so... We're just waiting to hear back on what the logistics of that is. And then I've got to start putting together, you know, how much it's going to cost to do the actual dig itself. But I mean, for what I was looking at, it's not going to require all that much money. I mean, I was told it would probably cost, you know, $100,000, something like that. I don't think it's going to cost that from what I'm looking at, especially with all the people that are volunteering and stuff. I mean, I'm looking at maybe $5,000-$10,000 tops. And I really don't foresee it really costing much more than that. And that's really all, the only really cost it come recovering from, you know, having to rent equipment and stuff like that to do the work, you know what I mean? That's really the only, expenses that are going to be recruited from that, but... you know, it's water pumps. It's just, you know, it's a lot of logistics, and it's a lot of stuff. But I mean, I've got archaeologists now. I don't know if I've told you, I've got archaeologists. I've got geologists from oil and gas exploration companies. Two, a couple of different archaeologists. One that works on the Archaeosaur site in Arlington, Texas. Guy in Florida that's offered up his company to. For the maps and stuff like that to do. I mean, we've got people that are really wanting to volunteer stuff, and I think we'll have more. And again, that's when I, this first initial part one of this Rockwall Ancient Societies film, that's really my goal for this is to use this as, you know, as a promotion piece and the ability to be able to get some interest up in this, to get, you know, some people who have the clout and the money to fund some dig like this. Or even bigger, and get this done, because there is something here, and we know that for a fact. And the fact that I now know that none of the scientific analysis that has been done by the scientific community at this point has actually been done on the rock wall itself, but actual outcroppings with inside of the wall, that puts us in a position to where we can change the actual scientific belief of what the wall is with this work. Because, again, I can prove, because I know what sites the scientists went to, because when these excavations were done, when these scientific analyses were done, they didn't have ground-penetrating radar and NASA satellite images at that time. They did some excavations. People thought it was the wall. They brought out scientists. The scientists looked at it, said that's a sandstone dike, which it was, and went home. And so the predominant view on the rock wall up to this point has been that it is a natural formation. Well, the game changer was when I went to the rock wall chamber of historical society and got the map from that had, I think, 10 or 11 outcroppings located within the area of the wall. Now, these outcroppings were thought for the longest time to be part of the actual wall itself. But when you overlay that map with the map of the wall itself, you find that those outcroppings are actually within of the wall, not the wall structure itself. And so the scientists that have deemed this to be a natural sandstone dike formation did their analysis on outcroppings within the wall, not on the proper wall itself, ladies and gentlemen. If we get this dig going, we are going to be able to have people come out and do scientific analysis on this, which we already know what we're going to find. And my God, that blue shale was deposited 500 million years ago. And it starts 25 feet below the top of the wall. The wall goes down another 60 feet once you get past the blue shale. So whatever's past that blue shale is 500 million years old or older, and dig this, the walls, the bricks of the wall itself get bigger the deeper you go. And for some reason, on John Lindsay's dig, they did 99, they didn't go down to the bedrock. And I find that more and more suspect. They didn't even do a full dig. They went down to a certain level and just stopped, like they were scared. Or like they didn't want to show what the rest of the way of what was there. Well, we're going all the way, baby. We're going to go all the way to the bedrock. We're going to do a big-ass chunk of this thing. And we're going to need people to sift through dirt and, you know, look for artifacts, everything else. By the way, if you come to my dig site, you're going to have to sign a non-disclosure agreement. Just go ahead and know that. But, yeah, man, I'm really excited about this and really stoked to have the opportunity to go out and do this. And again, I appreciate everybody who helped make that happen. And hopefully if we have to go out into the field again at any point, we'll be able to do that. Again, let's see what kind of, let me see if I have any emails here. Might have some, I don't know. I've been away for a few days. Let me go through the stack. I don't really see any. Yeah, I don't really see any. I thought I maybe had one. I don't know. I'll go back through. If I miss somebody's, I'll go back through and see what I find. But let's go ahead and get into some news tonight, and then we'll take a break and come back and get into more. Don't know if we'll continue our book reading tonight, but we'll get back to that tomorrow night. Columnist and author Andrew Sullivan said Sunday that atheism was growing in the United States because more and more people saw Christianity as an organization intent on gaining political power. And, you know, it's hard to argue with that. They've become fused with one political party, the Republican Party, a party that's now defined by a particular religious faith, evangelicism, or far-right Catholic hierarchy. And that is making many people feel that faith in Jesus is about politics and power and partisanship, in ways that's turning off an entire generation. No, well, that's the plan. That's been the plan for the longest time. It's worked well because, again, as I've said many times, an atheist is no more of a threat to the priest class than a blind follower of any religion. Because, again, you've got them right where you want them, and you've got them in a dogma. But it's interesting that that's starting to permeate the mainstream in a way where, you know, they're talking about it on mainstream. They're talking about their own agendas now on mainstream news. Oh, well, we can't figure out why Christianity and Republicanism is turning people to atheism. Oh, yeah, can't figure that out, huh? Because it's the same thing. It's the same reason why they put these clowns in there as the opponent against whoever the chosen puppet is going to be at that time. For instance, in the last election, when you had Obama going up against John McCain, nobody in their fucking right mind would have voted for John McCain. And the only people that did were fucking brain-dead retards, brainwashed by right-wing culture and everything else. They always put the person in there who's so goddamn outlandish and crazy, they will drive people to vote for the chosen one. And, of course, that's, you know, they're doing that all over again. But that's the same thing they've done with Christianity itself. People see evangelicals and televangelists, and they see Pat Robertson, and they see Tim LaHaye, and they see, you know, Rick Santorum, who dropped out today, by the way. You know, whoever it may be, they see these people, and it's, you know, that's how I was when I was growing up. I saw that shit and was like, no fucking way in hell do I want anything to do with that. And yes, when I was, you know, a teenager and stuff, and in my early 20s for, you know, a few years, I did consider myself for a short period of time an atheist when I was still asleep to a lot of this stuff. But, you know, once you have a spiritual experience on your own, and you can actually feel the energy of a presence of something that is existing in all things, it doesn't matter if you can't name it or build a religion out of it or build a temple around it. It doesn't matter. All that matters is that you can feel a connection to something beyond yourself. And when you feel that for the first time, it's unmistakable. So that's really what did it for me, you know, and I think that's the thing that you can never count out is human experience, our own personal experience, and the knowledge that we gain from that, from those experiences of connecting to energies that exist all around us at all times. Symptoms of a mysterious disease that has killed scores of seals off Alaska and infected walruses are now showing up in polar bears. The U.S. Geological Survey said on Friday, 9 polar bears from the Beaufort Sea region near Barrow were found with patchy hair loss and oozing sores on their skin, similar to conditions found in diseased seals and walrus. This is absolutely from chemtrails, absolutely from barium. This is classic barium poison. It could be, you know, it's very similar to the Morgellons type of stuff. But, I mean, there's no question these mystery diseases and stuff that are coming up, same as the mystery respiratory diseases in humans. You know, all these same type of these respiratory diseases, sores, oozing and stuff coming up and, you know, weaponized MRSA and staff and all this. It's happening everywhere and it's really affecting anything that's, especially things that are outdoors or people that work outdoors. Speaking of chemtrails, you guys might have saw this and heard about the story. There was this reports coming out of a massive fireball over Texas, rare unexplained fireball, and what's interesting is that I took one look at the picture of this alleged fireball, and I said, that's not a goddamn fireball, and now this is the second time this has happened. I said, that's not a goddamn fireball, that's a goddamn chemtrail. Because these chemtrail planes now, the way they spray, I mean, they just, you know, stuff just envelops them. Well, they're being mistaken. People don't know what they are. They're so unusual that people think they're fireballs streaking through the sky. And, you know, NASA just comes up and says, oh, yeah, that's just a contrail. Nothing to worry about it. So at first they said it was a meteor and it was an asteroid or it was space junk. Now they've come out, mystery fireball in Texas, actually a jet contrail, NASA scientist says. A bright object that streaked across the sky, Texas sky during the day, April 4th, originally believed to be a meteor burning up as it entered Earth's atmosphere, was actually a flying jet. And its contrail, a NASA scientist has confirmed. Local news stations reported that the bright object was a fireball, an especially bright meteor. And Bill Cook, head of NASA's meteoroid Environment Office, initially said it was indeed a fireball. And more evidence of the mysterious and unexplained observation that there are more fireballs in the spring than in other times of year. Isn't that rich? There's more fireballs in the spring than any other time of year. Yeah, because there's more fucking weather mod ops going on in the spring than any other time of year, motherfucker. How goddamn dumb do they think we are? However, other experts argue that the Texas fireball was actually a jet contrail. reflecting the glow of the setting sun, making it appear fiery. Well, yeah, contrails don't look like that. Contrails dissipate very quickly. They're not thick and glow like that. The reason you see that glow from the sun reflecting off of it is because they're spraying a radioactive isotope called barium up there, and when the radiation heat from the sun hits it, it activates it. Cook has agreed. Reviewing the video, it does appear to be a contrail. There were sightings of a daytime meteor April 2nd, but this video is not of a meteor or a fireball. This is a different event. The April 2nd daytime fireball, a rare event as a meteor, must be at least 1 yard across for its atmospheric entry to be visible during the day and was seen by thousands of people in New Zealand. Oh, it's just a contrail. Yeah, that's all it is, just normal. It goes up there and they get, you know, they fly around and them ice particles form on there because it's cold up there in that atmosphere and hot-ass engine exhaust be coming out of them engines and shit makes contrail. That's all it is. Ah, damn. Really? I just don't understand what the... is the cover-up that deep? I mean, it's just weak as hell, dude. I mean, this is up there with swamp gas. Yep, just swamp gas. Them airplanes fly around up there, and that damned old swamp gas comes out. Next thing you know, there's X patterns. I saw one make an anarchy symbol up there one day. It's just that damned old swamp gas. That's all it is. Jesus, Teddy fucking Christ. And speaking of that, not Jesus, Teddy fucking Christ, but... strange thing. Listen to this. Did NASA cover up mysterious orbs that flew past the shuttle mission? Newly uncovered video clearly shows unknown objects buzzing shuttle Atlantis. Yeah, these have been being seen for, you know, forever on NASA missions. Everybody from Story Musgrave, John Glenn and his Fireflies. And what's interesting is these things that they see appear, they don't appear to be like ships or craft. They appear to be almost like organic entities, you know. To the ground control commentator on NASA's live public feed, they're merely reflections on the camera lens, but the crew of the Space Shuttle Atlantis doesn't sound so convinced. A spooky YouTube video appears to show three orbs moving slowly around the Atlantis as it floats in orbit during a 2006 mission. The footage, which is a segment of the feed, begins with one of the astronauts describing to the ground control what they're seeing. The unnamed crew member says it's a structure that's definitely not rigid. Doesn't look anything like I've ever seen on the outside of the shuttle, that's for sure. He describes how the first object quickly moved to the nose of the orbiter, moving away at least 100 feet. For a few minutes, nothing of note happens, but then at 4 minutes and 45 seconds, the camera looks beyond the shuttle and focuses on three orbs that appear to be hovering in a triangular formation nearby. The ground control commentator immediately passes them off as reflections in the camera lens, but the shuttle crew members seem far less dismissive, with one confirming that they're seeing three or four objects and asking, "Can you confirm it's just the one that's moving?" However, the footage, despite being mysterious, remains too indistinct for any conclusions to be drawn about whether E.T. was really observing the shuttle mission. Many YouTube users who have studied it firmly believe the crew was looking at space junk. However, could E.T. have been zooming around Seoul, Korea recently? Well, you know, I think, again, that's an assumption. Saying they're E.T. is an assumption as much as saying that it's space junk, you know. We're always given this, you know, apples and oranges, black and white. You know, it's either space junk or it's aliens. Nothing in between. I beg to differ. There is an in between. There is also the factor of things that we don't have any knowledge of or are classified. And again, well, there's many tapes of this. Story Musgrave has caught this stuff. And it's always of these, you know, these things swimming in the outer atmosphere of Earth as if it's swimming through water, you know. And these things appear to be alive. They appear to be almost... you know, like less like machines or less like UFOs or crafts, but actually, you know, some sort of intelligent, sentient beings flying around there. It's very bizarre. So again, that sort of black and white, apples and oranges approach doesn't always work in every situation. Oh, fireballs? Oh, yeah. As I was talking, oh, yeah, they got a cream for that. Yeah. You can get a cream for fireballs at the same place you get Peter Patriot Stay Hard Dick Pills. They keep you hard. Or you're going to a FEMA camp, motherfucker, yeah. Oh, man. We are getting moon batty tonight. Thanks to everybody for staying up late with us. We got a lot more news to get into with you here tonight on the broadcast. My website where this broadcast originates from is theglobalreality.com. That's theglobalreality.com. My name is Josh Rees. I'm your host. We're going to take a break, come back, and get into more news for you here tonight. This is The Global Reality right here on the Global Reality Radio Network. Stay with us.
uncensored, no holds barred talk. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This is the Global Reality Radio Network.
All right, back here with you on the Global Reality, right here on the Global Reality Radio Network. I'm your host, Josh Reeves. Thanks for being with us here tonight for another late-night Moonbat edition of the broadcast. Got a lot more news here in this segment to get into with you here tonight, so thanks for staying up late with us. We're going to blow through this here in this segment of the broadcast. My website where this broadcast originates from is theglobalreality.com. That's theglobalreality.com. We have the chip-in banner there for the operating costs for April. And that's where you can chip in and support our work there. And please do so. And we also have a new sponsor here for the network. That's up there under the sponsor tab, Jean Marie's Juice Plus. Make sure you visit their site through the link there under the sponsor tab. And because that's, you know, if you make a purchase, something, you got to do it through the link so they can get paid and so we can get paid and all the rest of it. So there you go, Gina Marie's Juice Plus. That's our new sponsor. Proud to have them on, and hopefully we can help them out and they help us out. I like that. I like that so much more than the idea of, you know, at least this, you know that if you buy something from this, you know that the money's going to go to somebody who actually supports what it is that we do here. You know what I mean? Whereas, you know, if I went out and just got a bunch of random sponsors, you know, there's no guarantee that, you know, even if they have something worth a crap to buy, that your money's going to be going to people that are, you know, necessarily going to support the things that we do here. And, you know, it is kind of, that's not always important, I guess, but it's important for me because, I don't know, I guess I just have too many scruples or too many morals or whatever have you, I don't know. I'd rather have to scrape by than to see people's money go to these goddamn snake oil hucksters and pyramid scheme cream sales like Adnan Khashoggi and the whole GCN model. I mean, it's, you know, it's just ridiculous. But anyway, yeah, please support our work there and make a donation if you can. We just had to spend a lot of money on this trip, so we're kind of down to the low point, but any help we can have there is welcome, and we appreciate everybody out there who makes everything we do here possible. Thank you so much. Let's continue on with our news tonight. Get another UFO story. Seems that this is becoming the hot issue all of a sudden, yet again. A new video has surfaced that some claim shows a saucer-shaped UFO zooming past the window of a passenger airplane flying over South Korea. In the video, the unidentified passenger is filming the otherwise uneventful view from the plane's window. Suddenly, he makes a startled sound as the white saucer-like image comes into view. Later in the video, the purported UFO image is magnified. Ultimately, it looks more like an ivory-colored bowler hat than a piece of futuristic flying technology. Well, you know, to the idiot that wrote this article, go back and look at, you know, pictures in video or whatever from UFOs from, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years ago, whatever. And a lot of the ones that, you know, you can tell are actual legit something, you know, what it is, who knows. But the ones where you can legitimately tell it's not a hoaxed thing, that's what oftentimes what they look like. They look like a fucking bowler hat or, you know, something. I mean, that's where the term flying saucer came from. But I think ultimately all these things, you know, are no, I think we every once in a while we get a glimpse at one of these, and I think it's no more different than any probe that we would send out into the, you know, into the cosmos, or I don't think it's any different than any drone or reconnaissance vehicle that, you know, we send out. I mean, 30 years ago or 20 years ago, the idea of an unmanned, you know, reconnaissance vehicle flying around seemed like science fiction and futuristic stuff to us. But Now, it's an everyday common knowledge thing with drones being sold commercially for, you know, dirt cheap, a couple of $100. Remember we talked about the taco place? It was going to try to start delivering tacos with drones. I'm down for that. I'm just totally down for that. Really, I think that's what a lot of this stuff is. Is there? I mean, if you wanted to go check out a civilization without getting blown to bits, what would you do? You'd send a drone. You send a probe. And ultimately, I think that's what I've ever seen. The one that flies into the Concorde and the when they first sent the Concorde up in the 70s. They had a plane go beside it and shoot video footage of it. And as soon as they put that thing up in the air, these silver orbs started flying underneath it and were like flying alongside the Concorde monitoring it. There's footage out there of it. It's crazy. Nanotechnology is more and more finding its way into the medical world. And I, as all you probably do as well, have very mixed feelings about all of this, considering the idea of putting, you know, miniature machines in there that are controlled by somebody else. The idea of that, to me, just doesn't sound like anything I'm into. But this is how they're going to sell us on cancer cures and everything else. And I'm just concerned that, you know, that these things could be, you know, a Trojan horse for something else. Yes, you put a nanoparticle machine cancer cure in your body, but you also put the ability to be autonomously controlled by a machine somewhere, and, you know, how would you be ever be any wiser? Cancer that is spread throughout a person's body is tough to kill without causing too much collateral damage, but tiny protein factory particles could target tumors specifically by manufacturing cancer-killing drugs elsewhere within the human body. MIT researchers have created such particles that could someday make cancer-killing proteins on demand. Such nanoparticle materials that range roughly in size from 1/1000th to 10,000th in the diameter of a human hair contain a mixture of biological machinery needed to make proteins based on DNA sequences. This is the first proof of concept that you can actually synthesize new compounds from inert starting materials inside the body, said Avi Schroeder, a postdoctoral researcher at MIT's David H. Koch Institute for Integrative Cancer Research and a lead author of a paper detailed in the journal Nano Letters. Schroeder and his colleagues are also showed how to activate such tiny factories on demand through tests with mice. They used ultraviolet lighting to trigger the nanoparticles to release the DNA that would then begin the manufacturing process of proteins. Well, if they can turn it on, folks, or rather turn it off, if they can turn the cancer off, they could turn it right back on. See, this sets up this whole thing. Did you see that film? I know it was based on a musical or something before that, but if you haven't seen the movie Repo Men, not Repo Man with, not the old punk rock movie with Estevez, but Repo Men, I think Jude Law and, what's his name? Ghost Dog were in that. Anyway, yeah, you know, everybody has artificial hearts and livers and every other piece because the genetically modified food's gotten everybody to the point where they have to have that. And then, of course, they get everybody in hock and in debt for these body parts. And when you can't pay your bill and they design it so that you can't, they come and, you know, take it away and they get your money anyway. And this is what this kind of stuff sounds like to me. You know, as long as you have insurance or as long as you're, you know, doing what the government tells you to or whatever it may be, you'll be fine and cancer-free. But if you can't make your payments anymore, well, they shut off your little machine and the cancer goes back and spreads through your body all over again. I mean, this technology just sounds like a Trojan horse and B, a great way for them to be able to basically hold your health at ransom. You know, because they can put, if they start curing cancer by putting machines in people's body, they can charge however much they want for it. So very, again, the double-edged sword of technology. All right, I want to point this out. So one of our listeners brought this to my attention. It was just blown away by this. I wanted this to be fake so bad when I went and looked at it, but I actually went and found out it's actually not fake. Anunnaki Minerals out of Switzerland. There's an actual mining company in Switzerland called Anunnaki Minerals. Have you guys seen this shit? And they have a little green bull, like a, you know, a Marduk, Ra representation there. And it says, philosophy of our enterprise, responsibility for green mining. We always take care that we and all our partners will work with great respect at and in our Mother Earth. We gave us the guideline to save the earth and the surface of the area wherever we work. Our responsibility will always be that the animals, how our yak can come back and find necessary green food. Anunnaki minerals. You know, it said that they were here mining for gold, mining for stuff, right? Well, this, I just think that's just too funny. That's just too out of this world. Oh, man. You can't make that kind of shit up, can you? Oh, man, that's greatness. Let's see what else we have. Mind-reading weapon may be secret, maybe the next secret weapon. They've had this for decades. To be able to communicate, super soldier programs and be able to communicate telepathically through helmets, they've had this for years. It's just now going to be used and rolled out in a major way, so they're trying to tout it as some sort of new technology when it's, again, very old technology, of course. This is highly interesting, considering that this took place over Ostara, and you know what Ostara is, with the pagan ritual. That's pre-Easter and pre-Jesus and all this. You had Ostara and his fertility ritual and the goddess and the equinox and blah, 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 blah. Well, over the course of the weekend, Queen Elizabeth II has appointed the Duchess of Cornwall to the highest female rank in the Royal Victorian Order. Buckingham Palace said on Monday, the announcement that Camilla has been made a Dame Grand Cross comes on the day of her 7th wedding anniversary with Prince Charles, the Queen's son. Now, I love how this, you know, the Queen used to say she was a whore and she broke up Charles and Diana's marriage and blah, blah. Now they're giving her the highest degree, the highest Illuminati ranking a female can get. Even above Dame of Malta or any of that stuff. Awards under the Royal Victorian Order, which was founded in 1896 by Queen Victoria, are given by the Queen to people who have served her or the monarchy in a personal way. They are bestowed independently of the Prime Minister's office. Once vilified as the old flame who poisoned Charles' first marriage to Princess Diana, Camilla has been an integral member of the royal family since she married the prince on April 9, 2005, 8 years after the death of Diana. And, again, you know, you see how that whole thing played out. They wanted her in there. They wanted Camilla in there for the get-go. She was installed. And this is a very similar degree that they give. Order of the Garter is another one. We saw recently, a couple of weeks ago, I think it was, there was video, you can look it up, where Obama was pledging his undying servitude to the Queen and, it just, you know, it always struck me as odd. I thought this country was supposedly founded to get free of taxation from the, you know, from the crown, from England. At least that's the old yarn and the old tale they told us, right? Well, I think we can safely say maybe that's not 100% the whole story. And maybe this country was actually founded as an expansion of the British Empire in secret. Meanwhile, telling the inhabitants of this country that, you know, they were breaking free of that structure and breaking free of the crown. Because, I mean, in the White House, they have the Queen's bedroom there. You realize that? Why would you have a separate bedroom for the Queen of England inside of a country in the main White House that's supposed to be breaking free of the taxation of England? And, of course, you know, We've taken on the same taxation laws they had that allegedly we were breaking free from. And the Order of the Garter, I think it was Prince William a couple of years ago was given that. That's a very high Illuminati degree. You're basically stepping up to like Council of 13, Committee of 300 when you get that. And when you go and look up who else has gotten that distinction, none other than George Herbert Walker Bush. Poppy Bush, Bush Sr., was also given that award. And again, that's an award that's only given for your undying servitude to the Queen. So if Bush Senior is giving his undying servitude to the Queen, and Obama is giving his undying servitude to the Queen, it should be pretty clear that the United States and the whole lie we were sold of breaking free of England has been a complete lie and bullshit to keep us right where they want us at. We've never been free of them. Why is the Queen coming and buying all this land in Denver now where they've been setting up the new capital for years and years and years? It's pretty suspect. The war on terror has taken an odd and a kind of fun turn. The U.S. government has hired a white hat hacker collective to dig through used video game systems in an effort to track down bad guys. The Navy is leading the charge in this hunt, last week hiring California-based Obscure Technologies to head up the gaming systems monitoring and analysis project. The company will be paid just over $177,000 for the job of developing tools to extract sensitive information from six modern gaming systems and examine how it might be exchanged through messaging and chat networks. Wary of the obvious privacy concerns, the Pentagon says it only plans to use this technology overseas since it's illegal to use it on American citizens. Yeah. Yeah, that means it's going to be directly used on American citizens. Please, what do they ever care what's legal or not legal? I love when they try to throw that, oh, it's not legal, so we won't use it against you, don't worry. And then every story you read every day, everything you do on every communication device is tracked and traced. We want to make sure you know 18 times a day. I mean, that's why I don't even get why people, you know, conspiracy theorists or truther shows or whatever, even reinforce that, the thing, or even cover those stories about how everything's tracked and traced anymore. Because it's obvious that they're trying to enrage us and elicit a response out of us with this knowledge. Otherwise, it wouldn't reinforce it 18 times a goddamn day. I literally see 100 stories a day on this shit. Everything you do is tracked on the... Yes, we know. We all know. We're all aware. But that, I think that also lets you know that as much as that may be true, there's still a lot of snags, and it's not 100% foolproof. I think they want the idea. I'm not saying they can't track and trace everything we do. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is I think that they want the idea that everything you do is tracked and traced to be there, maybe more than it actually is in reality. Because most of this stuff is being done for content-specific advertising. The reason they're putting cameras on TVs and microphones and everything is for content-specific advertising. And it absolutely works. I mean, I got out of bed one day complaining, a couple of years ago, complaining I needed a new bed. I need a new bed. God, it's hurting my back. I get up, first thing, Facebook, everything is just, you know, mattress ads. Mattress ads being so, I mean, literally. You know, oh, I got to go get my cat some food today. Next thing I know, cat food ads everywhere, you know. Content-specific advertising, that's what they're looking for here. But, yeah, I mean, data mining through old video game machines. Yep, that's no real shocker there. Speaking of no real shocker here, Kony 2012 Group confirms WikiLeaks spy allegation. So the Kony 2012 Group has now admitted what, of course, we all have been saying since day one. They are indeed an intelligence op. And some stuff came out over the weekend connecting them to WikiLeaks, and they straight up said, yeah, that's true. We're not going to deny it. The nonprofit group Invisible Children has confirmed that a U.S. diplomatic cable published by WikiLeaks, which claims the group fed intelligence to the Ugandan government to enable the 2009 arrest of a central resistance figure, is in fact true. In 2009, Invisible Children was contacted by a member of the U.S. Embassy in Kampala regarding Patrick Kumakek, a former combatant who Invisible Children had been supporting in attempts to assist with special recovery and academic development in keeping with Invisible Children's mandate to provide assistance to individuals affected by LRA violence, an Invisible Children spokesman said to Raw Story in an email. At the time, it was brought to our attention that Mr. Kumakek had and a group of others were allegedly involved in activities that could be jeopardizing the lives of civilians and putting the organization and staff at its risk. And Invisible Children was deeply saddened to learn these allegations, blah, blah, blah. Well, I love that, though. Yep, you are an intelligence op. We knew that from day one. And all I can say is thank you for finally admitting it. Let's move on. A group of ancient fish called coelacanths have changed so little over time they are known as living fossils. Now the remains of a skull found in the Yunnan province of China confirms these creatures have been around largely unchanged for more than 400 million years. Once thought to have died out at roughly the time the dinosaurs disappeared, the first living coelacanth was discovered in a fishing net in 1938 off the eastern coast of South Africa. Since then, others have turned up elsewhere along the coasts of the Indian Ocean. While it is clear that their history goes way back, the fossils they have left behind have been scarce so far. A lower jawbone, more than 400 million years old, was discovered in Australia, hinted at the earliest known emergence of coelacanths, whose appearance matched the two species alive today. This small fossil has been described as the oldest coelacanth, but the authors of the recent research write that it offers so little information that it cannot be reliably placed within the fish's family tree. The newest fossil evidence, remains of a skull, date back to almost the same time and contain more definitive features that indicate both it and the Australian fossil were modern coelacanths, according to the study researchers writing in April 10th of the journal Nature Communications. And so we have here the evidence of something that over 400 million years hasn't really changed at all, hasn't changed at all, and it still exists in its same form. And so that kind of, it kind of throws a monkey wrench in the whole evolution thing because, we sort of see that, yes, some things do evolve and do adapt, but some things actually do stay the same over periods of time. It's kind of a fact that hasn't been introduced, and I think it could actually go a long way towards other things that we hold to be staples or absolutely unchangeables and may shake those things up in the coming years. The tiny town of Lakota, North Dakota, is quickly becoming a key testing ground for the use of unmanned drones by law enforcement after one of its residents became the first American citizen to be arrested with the help of a predator surveillance drone. The bizarre case started when six cows wandered onto Ronnie Bassart's 3,000-acre farm. Bassart, an alleged anti-government sovereignist, believed he should have been able to keep the cows, so he and his two family members chased police off his land with high-powered rifles. After a 16-hour standoff, the Grand Forks Police Department SWAT team, armed with a search warrant, used an agreement that they've had with Homeland Security for about 3 years and called in an unmanned aerial vehicle to pinpoint Broussard's location on the ranch. The SWAT team stormed in and arrested Broussard on charges of terrorizing a sheriff, theft, criminal mischief, and other charges. Bassart says he had no clue they used a drone during the standoff until months after his arrest. "We're not laying over here playing dead on it," says Bassart, who was scheduled to appear in court on April 30th. He believes what the SWAT team did was definitely illegal. "We're dealing with it. We've got a couple of different motions happening in court finding the use of the drone." Repeated calls to Bassart's attorney were not returned. Douglas Manbeck, who is representing the state of North Dakota in the case, says the drone was already used after warrants were already issued. So, again, setting the precedent here, and to be honest with you, I hate to try to be a dick, but, that's a problem with some of these sovereignists and some of these, I'm not saying that, nothing against you if you are one of those. I'm just saying that sometimes these guys are not as informed about things as they think they are. They think they're informed enough, and they're not, and, maybe if you spend a little bit more time trying to figure out how, whether or not your name's a corporation or not. I don't even know if any of that's true or whatnot. I mean, some people tell me it is and say they've done it, and more power to them. But what I'm saying is you ought to know in this day and age that surveillance and drones and all the rest of this stuff, it's just an everyday thing. They can use it with Homeland Security, especially with the Patriot Act and all of these things. They have given themselves carte blanche to be able to use this technology anywhere and in any situation, in any case you want. So you can try to fight it all day, and it doesn't make it right, I agree. But the fact of the matter is, if you're paying attention, you would know that they have given themselves a blank check to use this stuff wherever they want, and it's pretty much common knowledge with everybody I know nowadays. I guess this guy's the first to go, last to know. House Budget Chairman Representative Paul Ryan says his Catholic faith helped shape the Republican budget plan. Really? So being Catholic helped you shape the Republic. Well, that looks like we can close the books on that one, Johnny. Keepers of the Vatican's treasury, Rothschilds. Boy, you know, if nothing indeed is going to happen this year in 2012, as many people believe, if it indeed is just going to be just like any other year, and I think there's a good case that there's definitely a good chance of that. The rich folks seem to be thinking otherwise. I mean, George Lucas and Steven Spielberg are incessantly talking about 2012, and they believe the end of the world's happening, just absolutely, no doubt about it. But it seems that there's, you know, people with money are spending big money on this stuff. The doomsday shelter being built below Kansas Prairie, where millionaires will be able to sit out the apocalypse in style. And these guys are planning on something happening. But check out that fucking bug out bunker, dude. Look at that motherfucker right there. Dude, they're going to be partying it up in there, dude. They're going to be having a fucking Coke party on every floor of that thing when the shit goes down. Oh, pass me another line. Yes, here comes the apocalypse. When you buy a house, you end up feeling like you'll be paying it off until the world ends. Well, how about one of those luxurious condos which come with all the mod cons as well as a pool, a movie theater, and a library? Oh, and a guarantee that it will survive doomsday if and when that fateful day comes. For these luxury flats deep below the Kansas Prairie in the shaft of an abandoned missile silo are meant to withstand everything from economic collapse and solar flares to terrorist attacks and pandemics. Naturally, there will be no one around to phone if the guarantee fails. But at that point, the insurance will probably be the least of your worries. So far, four buyers have thrown down a total of about $7 million for havens to flee when disaster happens or the end is now. And developer Larry Hall has options to retrofit three more Cold War-era silos when this one fills up. Hall said they worry about events ranging from solar flares to economic collapse to pandemics to terrorism to food shortages. These doomsday preppers, as they are called, want a safe place, and he will be there with them because Hall, 55, bought one of the condos for himself. He says his fear is that the sun flares could wipe out the power grid and cause chaos. He and his wife and son live in Denver and will use their condo mostly as vacation time. I love that he lives in Denver already. Yeah, so the guy who built this definitely knows. He definitely knows what's happening. He's definitely aware of what's going to be going on in the coming years. The chance of modern-day RoboCops being called in to help with American crimes is seeming more likely, with U.S. police forces being told they can request battlefield robots produced by the Defense Logistics Agency over the last decade. Defense agency delegates told a conference in Washington last week that any police or Homeland Security Department with a counterterrorism or anti-drug mission may be eligible to get its very own robot. Dan Arnold, a regional manager of the agency's disposition office, says that hundreds of war-hardened robots will be donated to police departments. The likeliest robotic police recruits are ground robots used for tactical surveillance or for explosives handling. The robots most likely to be used are those such as the Throwbot, a small robot which can be thrown by troops around corners to expand their fields of vision. Robots such as the Packbot and Talon machines, which have become central to bomb disposal in Afghanistan and other war zones, may come into use by security departments. So the Talon, I thought they decommissioned that thing because it was fucking like killing troops and shit. Oh, man. That's all. I mean, like, you don't have enough indignities in your day. You're going to have to deal with fucking Ed 209 whenever you go out, you know. You have 30 seconds to comply. Wonderful. A landmark new microchip will be more accurate than any other one on the market by being able to determine the user's precise location within centimeters. if you have a smartphone, you already have the ability to do that. They can already pinpoint you down to the fucking very location you're standing at through the GPS and everything on your smartphone. Why is this such a shocking revelation to everyone? I saw this plastered all over the Truther site today. They can tell where you're at down to a centimeter now with a microchip. Ah! And your dumbass is sitting there probably reading this on your fucking iPhone. I don't own a cell phone. I refuse to own one. Never have. Never will. Suck it. But they can still find where the fuck I'm at if they want. Not only will it be geographically accurate, but will also give information about the location in terms of height and depth as well. The chip being produced by tech company Broadcom can pinpoint the location of a smartphone both inside and outside of buildings. You can tell how far above ground the cell is at the time. And again, this is how they got us to buy into everybody having a low jack on them. Everybody having, you know, everybody thought we were going to get a, you know, a tattoo of a barcode on our neck. You know? No. It's your phone. You know, you got to have a phone, right? Fuck a phone. That goddamn thing ringing while I'm doing something important. Fuck that. Using information from the typical sources like cell phone towers, satellites, and Wi-Fi hotspots, the company has incorporated new sources of information to make the Broadcom 4752 even more revolutionary. Amid the series of new sources of information, which they vaguely label ubiquitous navigation, is the use of an atmospheric pressure sensor that can help the chip determine how high up in the air the phone is. Right, this is all being used for their tactical advantage. Everybody has acquiesced to being tracked and traced and located and tagged like a goddamn dog by voluntarily taking a cell phone. Everybody is voluntarily taking these things, so it's kind of hard to bitch about being tracked and traced when, I mean, I love that. You get these people ranting and raving on these Patriot shows and Truth shows about tracking and tracing, and yet every one of goddamn one of them owns a fucking iPhone or some kind of smartphone. A bunch of hypocrites, you know? Same as the bunch of hypocrites that were on all these networks I used to be on. Oh, free speech this, free speech that. But don't cuss because they'll piss off our micro FMs. Fuck you. It's either free speech or it's not. You either get to say what you want or you don't. There's not much middle ground there. You know what I mean? Let's see what else we have here. I think we about got through it all tonight. We're getting close. Good news for Volvic and Evian. Bill Gates funds new machine that filters your toilet waste back into drinkable water. Yay! What we've always wanted. Now you don't have to wait for your poop and pee to go through the pesky sewer system and back into your tap. No. You can have toilet to tap instantly now. You can poop and pee and drink it instantly. Safe for the environment. Recycle everything. Pretty soon it'll be you poop and you pee and then, you know, a goddamn Big Mac will come out of a hot and piping out of an oven. Oh, wow, look at that. I took a dump and a Big Mac came out. Oh, it tastes just like a Big Mac. Yeah, it tastes exactly the same. A big rubbery piece of shit. That's good stuff. Next time you see a dog lapping thirstily at a toilet bowl, pause for thought next time. It could be you. A new invention funded by Bill Gates aims to turn used toilet water into drinking water. Manchester University Sarah High is an expert in nanotechnology. There's the nanotechnology again. The science of manipulating atoms in matter and says it could make wastewater from toilets safe to drink. The innovation, which Bill Gates has funded, could transform the lives of millions of people in the third world. High believes a new range of materials could extract energy from human waste. Extracting energy from human waste? Oh, that's great. So we're going to power our homes with our poo, and we're going to drink our own pee. By the way, all provided by GMO Monsanto food. Man, the future is so bright. I got to take a shit. We're going to continue our series of reading tomorrow night, our new theosophical book we started. If you hadn't heard that continued series, definitely tune in for that. I want to thank everybody for tuning in and being with us here tonight. Thanks to everybody who supported our trip to go and shoot for the new film as well. And it was a fantastic thing for me, and really gained a lot of new perspective. And I think this is going to be a great film, and I'm excited to get more of it done. We'll probably have another one more fundraiser for this film, and then that'll be it. And we'll just continue on tricking on to the future. I want to thank everybody for tuning in and being with us here tonight. TheGlobalReality.com is my website. Use the Chip and Banner there to help us out and support our work if you can. And we will see you tomorrow for the broadcast. My name is Josh Reeves. I love each and every one of you. You guys have yourselves a great one. Take care.